Hello, everybody. Welcome to Danger on Delmarva. My name is Rhonda Jefferson, and I'll be your host as we explore the dark and winding roads that lead around the Delmarva Peninsula. If you're new here, welcome. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. The Delmarva Peninsula is an area that is in the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States. It includes all of Delaware, which I'm going to add an addendum here. Some people do consider above the canal to be part of Delmarva while others don't. But for the most part, it does include all of Delaware, Maryland to the east of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, and Virginia to the northeast of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. Now, before I get into the actual episode for today, I talk a lot about how the water is so important to Delmarva Peninsula. I mean, it's in the name in that a peninsula is surrounded by water on three sides. And also to the west of the Delmarva Peninsula, we have the Western Shore. And early Tuesday morning, there was a catastrophic tragedy that I was actually up when the news came out about it. I have insomnia. And that a cargo ship, the Dolly, hit the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and the bridge collapsed. If you are in the U.S., you've probably seen this all over the news. If you're not, I'm just giving a little bit of background about what happened early Tuesday morning. And there were eight people that were thrown into the water, construction workers who were on the bridge at that time. And at least as of the last report that I've read at the time of recording, there are six that were missing. Those numbers changed a little bit from what I saw initially, but it's just my heart, my thoughts and prayers go out to all of the families involved, those that were injured, those that at this point they're presuming have lost their lives. And even for all those that witnessed it, those that were on the ship, it was just very shocking to see. And also just how quickly the video came out. The article I saw happened or was uploaded very shortly after it happened, and there was already video. And that was kind of surprising to see. I opened the article and I guess the video automatically plays, and it was just very shocking to see. And coincidentally, I'm on the two episodes I'm working on currently, because they're about two brothers and two different incidents. The one that I was going to do today, the initial one that I knew about, I was going to go over some of the history of that island, and I was going to even reference Francis Scott Key, who wrote the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. And just thinking about that took me back to visiting Fort McHenry, where he wrote the Star Spangled Banner. And so just a couple of days, and even the day before that happened, I was thinking of Francis Scott Key as I was writing. And it's, like I said, it's just very shocking for that to happen. You would hope that the bridge had more stamina, but at the same time, it's a very large cargo ship. So again, just my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone involved in this, and also to those who are doing the search and rescue, the investigations. There's still some danger involved to that whole process as well. So just prayers for their safety as they're doing all of that. And now to bring up just a couple things about the upcoming episodes. The script for this particular episode is actually double the length of any other episode I've ever done. And this is just the first part to it. So as I'm going through and, reading my notes through, I may be kind of improvising so that it's not a 2.5 hour long podcast about only one of the brothers. Like I said, I found the first one and I was looking for information and came across this one that happened a little bit earlier, so I wanted to do them in chronological order. I was very fortunate in that there was information that had been digitized by the University of Virginia, and that was amazing in helping me find the information that I needed for both cases, because I would not have been able to find more than just a few paragraphs otherwise. Also, someone on Ancestry.com had done research, and I was able to link people together that previously I hadn't been able to do. I kind of knew just by references, reading through articles, who they were, but I had no verification of where they were in relation to another person. So I don't know if this person would even know about the podcast and be listening, but if by any chance, Denny, you know who you are probably, if I'm talking about the Pitts family, he did a lot of research and, you know, for the Pitts family. And that, again, allowed me to kind of continue on with what I needed to do. So I just want to give credit to where, you know, that information came from, as it was extremely important, along with my normal archive newspapers that I use as resources. And those resources will all be linked in the description of the episode. Also, in the description, I will have a link to a PayPal or Buy Me a Coffee. And that's just to help in any resources or research that may need to be done in the platform hosting, things like that. If anybody, you know, could or wishes to donate, that would be greatly appreciated. Also, Google Podcasts will be going away, just as a reminder, in April. So I don't know how that's going to impact uploading anything. So I may even try to rush frantically this weekend and get the second episode up so that there's no, I guess you'd say, break in being able to upload. You know, I just don't know if there will be any problems with that. Now, pretty much all of my episodes, except for the occasional one that is more lighthearted, does include information and content that may be difficult for some people to hear about, including things such as violence, death, injury. So I just want to make sure that everybody knows before we go forward. And with all that being said, let's get into the episode of Major Sidney Pitts. The name Major Sidney Pitts is kind of interesting as well. And a listener actually messaged me and was talking about how she was doing some, you know, research in family history. And she was coming across incidents where things were spelled differently, even a last name that, yes, you could tell it was meant to be pronounced the same way, but multiple different spellings. And she even sent me a screenshot where two people who were on the same bracket, so I don't know if they were married or if they were siblings or exactly what the relationship was, but they were on the same bracket but had the spelling of the last name in two different ways. And the listener, Casey, I'm not going to say a last name, but Casey, you know, was just trying to find out more about the family history, but with having different spellings, even for the same person, but on multiple different documents, it's very difficult to find, you know, what you really need. And a couple things with Major Sidney here is, after reviewing everything and looking at ancestry records, I really believe his first name is Major. The second part is that Sidney was spelled sometimes with a Y and sometimes with an I as the second letter. So it made for some interesting searches. And again, I believe his first name is Major. So I might accidentally call him Sidney sometimes, because, you know, during the research, I just kept seeing Major and thought it was a title until I went further back into the ancestry. So just excuse me if I slip a few times instead of calling him Major, if I call him Sidney. Now, I did see that there was another child born the year before, and his first name was Major, but unfortunately he passed away. So that's why I'm believing the first name would be Major. So I also want to take a look at the location where this takes place. Now, there's two counties in Virginia that are part of the Eastern Shore of Delmarva, and one is Northampton County, where this will be taking place, and serves as the county seat. Now, you might think of the county seat as being a very large and bustling community, as people have a lot of business to take care of. But this is a very small, very friendly, close community. And it really embodies the small town feeling. In the 2000 census, Eastville had 203 residents. At the time of these events that we'll be discussing today in 1878, the Northampton County Courthouse would be the backdrop to a startling and violent event. Now, the town itself, not only is there kind of a smaller number of residents, but it, according to the research I did, it says the town is itself only 0.2 square miles, so it's pretty small as well. The general area was settled pretty early on in terms of European settlers on Delmarva. The area that was close to what we now call Eastville was settled around 1620, but it wasn't until the latter part of the 1600s that the land that currently holds the name of Eastville was settled. Eastville is, you know, pretty centralized as far as Northampton County, so that's the main reason why it was chosen. It was, you know, at least about an even distance away for people to get to, as compared to maybe some people having to travel a longer distance. And again, this is 1878, so there would not have been cars for them to use. It would have been sometimes quite, you know, the journey to get to different places. It was suggested at that time that the home of Henry Matthews, who was one of the first, if not the first, European to settle on the Eastville land. It did have a few different names. So what is now Eastville, Henry Matthews is the person who first settled that. And it was suggested that his home be used as the courthouse until they had a more permanent location. And there was one that was built in 1690, but there were a few different courthouses built throughout the years. In 1773, things were actually made official that this was a town, and the town was called Northampton Courthouse. So courthouse was actually part of the name. One of the newer courthouses that was built was in 1795, and more homes and businesses started to, you know, emerge in the area. And after the name of Northampton Courthouse, it was then known as Peachburg, and then finally, by 1800, the name had been changed to Eastville. The town does hold at least a brief history in regards to the founding of the nation, because in August of 1776, which was 200 years before I was born, I was an August baby and a bicentennial baby, but on that date, or in that month, the Declaration of Independence was read from the courthouse steps. Just kind of an aside, I have a nephew who was born that same year as well, who was a few months older than me. And then I have a nephew and two nieces that were also born in 1976, definitely not that old. So a nephew and two nieces born after me in that same year, and we call ourselves the Bicentennial Jeffersons, even though I think we all have different last names, but we call ourselves the Bicentennial Jeffersons, and we were all pretty close growing up. So even though I was technically their aunt, we really grew up more as like cousins, you know, that type of feel. The county itself, Northampton County, as of the 2020 census, has a little over 12,000 people. Since the time of the events we'll be discussing today, there has even been a new additional courthouse built in 1899. Now, if visiting the town, you will see that there is kind of a courthouse complex, including the courthouse built in 1731. There's also a clerk's office that was built in that same year, and a prison complex built in 1814 that are all kind of part of a courthouse green. Now, regarding the structures of those buildings, they all have original furnishings and fittings. So it goes back, you know, well over 200, getting very close to 300 years that, you know, some of those artifacts or those antiques are still there from the original building. Now, I probably have about two more pages of history and facts I could probably go over, but I know you probably want to hear the story that, you know, really was the focus of today's episode. Major Sidney Pitts was the son of Judge E.P. Pitts, or Edward Parker Pitts. And here I want to go back to the whole searching for people's names and finding information about them. There will be some times, if you were to go back and look through the resources, where there is someone who's called E.P. Pitts, but I believe that was an error because that was 3 years after Judge Edward Parker Pitts had passed away. There are going to be a lot of names that either use initials or even vary in the way that they're presented, like sometimes with their first initial middle name, and then the next time it would be the first name middle initial. So we will see that with the Pitts, and there will also be a family with the last name of Nottingham with, you know, I wasn't able to find really how all of them were related in regards to the Nottinghams, but there will be quite a few people with the same last names. Just to discuss a little bit about Edward Parker Pitts to give an idea of Major as well, is when I started to look into him, the first thing I found was about him being impeached from office, or at least seeking to remove him. There were ads, I guess you would say, or notices that were published in newspapers for a certain amount of time that said that Judge Pitts was under review for impeachment. So I kind of thought immediately, what could this judge have done to, you know, undergo this process of impeachment? That's pretty severe. And sometimes it's worth it to put things into context, because looking at what he was charged with, it sounds like he was standing up for what he thought was right. Now, the location for the next episode has more to do with Judge Pitts's stance on things. The location, of those events had more of a historical context, I believe, to what Pitts was trying to do. So I will save that for the next episode, so that it's, you know, all kind of related. But looking at future documents, it still does refer to Edward Pitts as judge. So even after 1862, which is when the impeachment started, or the impeachment process, he still had judge before his name, looking at some documents from, you know, a few years later. But now we find ourselves in March of 1878. And Major found himself in a little bit of a legal quagmire. At least that's what it would seem to be for him, and based on the actions that everybody around him are going to take. All parties involved seem to be, in my opinion, stubborn. Major's family had a good reputation, with his father formerly being a judge, and also an uncle being a senator from the state of Maryland. And this whole saga actually begins with the death of another man. Major had borrowed $20 from a man named Elijah Brittingham. $20 then would be about $616 now. Mr. Brittingham was the postmaster of the town, and Pitts had told him that he was expecting some money to come in, but he just needed to borrow the $20 for now, and he would return it that Friday. Unfortunately, though, Mr. Brittingham passed away, and based on some of the documentation I read, it is stated that Sidney, or Major Sidney, actually did go to Elijah Brittingham's home to try to pay the debt, but the man was very, you know, ill at the time, and they didn't think it was proper to be transacting any business while he was that ill. Plus, Major's brother Edward, and his name is Edward Dennis Pitts, who was a lawyer, went with him. Now, because, you know, the sum of money was somewhat large, his brother Edward wanted to make sure everything was done by the book, and so at the time, they did not repay the loan. Things weren't really as formal back then, but they probably wanted some type of receipt showing that it had been paid. Unfortunately, though, with Mr. Brittingham's death, they were unable to move forward and pay him. Now, it was known that Major was going to be leaving for St. Louis shortly. He was going to be studying under an attorney that his father had known. Now, there was no hiding this fact. Everybody who knew Major knew that he was going to be going away. And this did include some men of the town named Mr. George Toy, T-O-Y, and an R.V., so like Robert, V like Victor, Nottingham. This is where we get into all the Nottinghams. As well as another attorney who was kind of a contemporary of Major, only 1 year older than him, a man named Alfred or A.P. Tom, spelled T-H-O-M. Tom was an attorney himself, and he is going to play the other major role in this whole incident. Now, some of the terms that were used back then were a little bit different. It was stated that George Toy and R.V. Nottingham were to be the securities of the estate. So I was a little confused as to what the securities meant, and I really wasn't able to find a satisfactory answer on that. But these were not the men who were going to actually do the final settling of the estate. But knowing that Pitts was going to be leaving for St. Louis quickly, they went to him almost immediately and asked for the $20. Major did ask his brother what should he do, because there were no official documents, nothing that Toy and R.V. Nottingham could give to Sidney to show that they actually had the authorization to take those funds. And he was concerned about giving them the $20 and then later the final executor of the estate coming forward and wanting that $20 as well. So Edward did advise his brother not to pay the $20. But Pitts did have the, you know, standing traveling arrangement for him to go to St. Louis. So knowing this, Toy and Nottingham went to a judge and asked for an emergency hearing about assigning a curator, which basically means the same as an executor or administrator of the estate. The hearing was held, and A.P. Tom was appointed the position of being what's called the curator of the estate. But it's not like today where Pitts could have gotten a text message saying, "Hi, I need to meet you. I have some papers to show that I'm the executor." Nothing like that. Pitts was actually getting ready to get on a boat to go over to Baltimore. So they were doing this very, very quickly. There was a capias issued on the on the debt, basically saying that he was going to try to flee the debt, even though there was at no point in time that Pitts denied owing the money. He always openly said that, you know, he did owe it. It may just come down to the fact that he was born and raised in a family with a lot of legal knowledge. One of his brothers also became an attorney, and he was studying to become one, where, you know, he wanted everything done, you know, to the letter. And just if you're curious what a capias is, instead of, say, using the word warrant, it is, quote, a writ ordering the arrest of a named person, end quote. So it's pretty much, you know, a warrant to arrest someone compared to, say, I guess, like a search warrant or things like that. Now, Tom went to the prison or jailhouse to give these papers to the sheriff. The sheriff's name was L.J. Nottingham. So this is the second Nottingham, who I'll refer to as sheriff, but he was sick. So the papers were actually given to a man named Mr. Colonna. Now, in different pieces of testimony, he's listed as both a janitor and also a jailer. And one description also says that he had not yet been sworn in. So that made it sound like he was training or trying to become a jailer. But Tom gave him the papers. And both Tom and Colonna went to the wharf to try to catch Pitt before he left. But with Sheriff Nottingham sick, there was really no one else there to assist in the arrest. So Colonna actually, you know, like I said, he went to the wharf with Tom and with Sidney, or Major Sidney, being someone who's knowledgeable of the law. He actually knew that Colonna had not been sworn in, and he didn't see that he had the authority to arrest him. So Major said that he would not be arrested. He didn't cooperate. He would not go willingly. And then they even formed a posse. And somehow the posse was not able to arrest Major on a wharf as he was about to leave on a boat. But he did get on a boat to Baltimore, which, depending on the article you read, may say either the Helen or the Maggie. I saw Helen more than Maggie. Now, Edward found out about this little kerfuffle, and he knew things had to be taken care of. At least at this point, I've read through the whole newspaper articles about Edward, you know, I know that he realized things were kind of bad here. He probably was now going to try to take things into his own hands as much as possible to help his brother. He also had time to read the documents and ask, you know, whoever he needed to verify with, that these documents were actually valid. So Edward got on a boat himself and went to Baltimore and tracked down his brother. He told him, you need to come back and pay this $20. But it's about here that I found a pretty good, I don't want to say twist, but maybe an understanding of why this was being done so quickly. That was, you know, one of my biggest thoughts is, why was it necessary to be so quick about it? Now, it's 1878. It's not like now where you can go on Venmo or something and send somebody $616, the equivalent of the 20. You would actually need to give it to them or, you know, go through other methods that were quite different than what we go through today. He may have even at some point had to ask his brother to pay it, and he would send his brother the money. But, you know, even though there were these options, it might have been taken a little bit longer. Why were these men so anxious to get back this $20 that they actually took out a capias against Major, who at no time hid the fact he owed the money? It's because that the $20 that was lent to Pitts, well, Mr. Brittingham actually took it from the post office till. It's not mentioned anywhere that this was the reason why people were acting so quickly, but to me, it sounds like something or a reason why they may have just wanted to protect Mr. Brittingham's, you know, reputation, because it would look like he actually stole from the post office if they didn't get the money back. So that's just kind of my opinion. And it put things in perspective, at least to me, in wondering why this was so urgent. So hearing this from his brother, he did decide to come back and pay the $20 before he left for St. Louis. Now, if you believe the stories told, when Sidney got back to Northampton County on the evening of March 28th, some people say that he actually went to an undertaker to have himself measured for a casket because he said, quote, he would most likely be needing it by the following day, end quote. That's, again, if you believe some of the stories that were told. There is another one that says that Major went into a bar and brought out his gun and just kind of looked at it and maybe spun the chamber. He made it very clear that he had a gun. So these are stories that were told after all of these events had taken place. Around 8:30 in the morning of the following day, which was March 29th, 1878, Major was standing close to the courthouse and was described as being in the area of R.V. Nottingham's store. Now, this is R.V. Nottingham, one of the securities of the Brittingham's estate. Now, there was another building or store owned by R.W. Nottingham. Two different stores, and the events are going to take place kind of in between these two stores where there's the courthouse. Because it was so close to the courthouse, I'm thinking that Pitts waited there because he knew an attorney, Alfred Tom, would probably be approaching the courthouse at some point in time. Pitts was very upset that the KPS was issued, and while Tom was approaching, Pitts yelled out to him asking why, you know, he had taken out the KPS and then also why he tried to serve it when there was no authority, referring back to Colonna, who had not been sworn in. As the two men are walking towards each other, Alfred Tom told Major that he, quote, had no explanation to make, end quote. Alfred Tom pulls out his revolver first. But so seeing this, Sidney pulls out his own gun. And he said, quote, if you shoot me, I shall shoot you, end quote. Now, there were a number of witnesses to everything that was going on. And it was really emphasized that that Mr. Pitts was using abusive language, which, frankly, today we would probably look at and be like, seriously? But again, put this in perspective of 1878. I'm thinking of the two stores owned by the two brothers with the courthouse in the middle and two men with their revolvers out approaching each other. It sounds almost like a Western, but it's taking place here on the eastern shore of Delmarva. But Pitts supposedly said to Mr. Tom that you are a damn scoundrel and a damn rascal. And these remarks were very, very inflammatory. Many people describe both men shooting almost simultaneously. Pitts was hit on the wrist and ran around a corner of one of the buildings to take cover because he needed to cock the gun, but he couldn't do so with the injured hand, at least not in a very hurried fashion. He was able with his other hand to work the revolver to where he could cock it. But as soon as Sidney was ready and came around the corner, Tom had been standing there waiting for that to happen, and both men fired again, with Sidney being shot dead and Tom taking a bullet that broke his jawbone and teeth, and according to the doctors, including his own father, who was a doctor, believed that it lodged somewhere near his vertebrae. So even with today's modern medicine, it could have been a very, very dangerous wound. So back then, it was very severe. They were having trouble locating the bullet, and he had bled quite a bit, so they really did not expect Alfred to recover. Now, the investigation following showed that both of the pistols had two empty chambers, which corroborated everybody's story about what happened. And so there are facts that are really indisputable in this case. The events that took place were pretty consistent with a number of different people testifying. There may have been some minor inconsistencies about the exact wording that was used when the two men were yelling at each other, but the meaning of what they said and the actions they took were pretty much, you know, in line with every witness testimony that was given. It then went to a coroner's inquest, which is to decide exactly how Pitts died. That was a pretty obvious thing, but it still needed to be done because it was not, say, a natural death. There needed to be a cause determined, and that was to go before the coroner. Besides Toy, there was a man named John Cragen. He was the barkeeper at a building called the Taylor House. Another man named John Winder also gave testimony. Nottingham, Charles Savage, Christopher Baker. These are all men in the area who gave an account of what they saw. And we don't really see these coroner's inquests as much today as, as they were when they took place in previous centuries. There may still be some countries that use them more frequently, but they're not as frequent as they were back in this time period. After the coroner's jury concurred, it came to the conclusion that everybody pretty much knew that Major Sidney Pitts came to his death on Thursday morning, March 28th, between the hours of 8 and 9 by a bullet fired from the pistol in the hands of Alfred P. Thomas. And that's what the actual finding was, that last phrase, or those last phrases that I gave. Things did, though, move very quickly, and amazingly enough, Alfred Tom was recovering, so I was quite surprised to see that he also, made it with that severe injury. Now, unlike today, where attorneys will take weeks and weeks, maybe months or years, to compile all the information they need about a case, especially a murder case, a preliminary examination was held on April 25th. So this is less than a month from the shootings. Alfred Tom was actually able to attend. So right here are the next stage in the proceedings, where it wasn't now a question of how Pitts died. We all know that now. And even before the coroner's inquest, people knew. But the objective here then was to see if it should be sent to the grand jury to decide on whether or not there should be an indictment. Tom would appear before three judges, William Fisher, W.J. Goffigan, and also an L.J. Goffigan. All in all, there were over 20 people that gave testimony, and even with the fact that Tom had pulled his gun first, he was discharged. That means the whole process would not move forward to the grand jury, that basically the judges, after only 15 minutes of deliberation, found that there wasn't enough evidence to move it forward to the grand jury. Now, I was quite surprised by this for a number of reasons. First, let's just get to Pitts's family. His uncle was a senator from Maryland. His father was a judge and was well respected in the community. I'm sorry, I couldn't speak there. Well respected in the community. And these judges may have very well worked with Major Sidney's father. They probably also knew his brother, Edward. The other thing that I was thinking of is Tom pulled his gun first. So even if we believe the stories, which I find the one about being measured for a coffin basically to be, I can't imagine that. But then again, I didn't live at the time. But yes, the biggest surprise to me was the fact that Tom was the one who brought out his gun first. So Pitts, theoretically would have just been defending himself. But apparently that was not what the judges saw. Or they thought that there may have been too much of a chance that a jury may say, well, Tom was in fear because he heard about Pitts going to the undertaker. He heard about Pitts going, into the bar and showing his gun, and that possibly he was just trying to be proactive. That's the only reason I can think that the judges would not have sent it forward. I also have to wonder, even with knowing that the $20 came from the post office till, these were quite big steps to take against a young man's just starting out in his life, trying to become an attorney. He didn't want these charges against him because who knows how it could have affected his career. So Major Sidney Pitts was being a little stubborn, in my opinion, but also to look at R.V. Nottingham, Toy, and Alfred Tom, they took very quick steps to try to retrieve these $20, even though they knew exactly where he would be and that he also had family in the area. So looking at the two young men, Sidney Pitts was a man who, at only 22 years old, had served as an assistant professor at Bethel University. Now, he was said to have graduated with, quote, highest honors some years ago, end quote. Now, again, he was only 22, but as time changes, 22 was comparatively older at that time. Now, 22 would not be an age where you would expect to be an attorney or an assistant professor. So looking at it in that context, it was a different time, and he was very young to us, but at that time period, he had already finished college and also what we would call a graduate degree. We have Tom, who was the son of a doctor. He himself graduated with a law degree and was only 23 years old himself. And all of this happened over $20 or around $616 in today's money. These events were tragic, and I have to wonder, how it got to that point. There was mention that Pitts and Tom had known each other and were friendly with each other, but Pitts had gone away, and when he came back, just the friendship wasn't really rekindled. And I have to somehow think maybe there was something in the background of that friendship, even though they weren't described as being close friends. Did something happen where maybe Tom or even Toy or Nottingham didn't trust that Sidney would repay? Or were the men just anxious to kind of cover the tracks for their friend who took $20 from the post office till to loan out? What were their motivations in making this go so quickly to these tragic events? Needless to say, the island and probably most of the Eastern Shore in the state of Virginia were in a state of shock. The solemn task of bringing the remains of Sidney to Norfolk again, he had to come by boat because Norfolk is off the Eastern Shore, but that's where their father was buried. So he did accompany the remains to Norfolk. And again, there were some issues with the name where they say it was the father, when in actuality, it would have had to be his brother, Edward, who brought him over. And he was taken to be laid to rest at St. Paul's Church. I find it interesting, too, in this case, how a decade or so can make people look differently at others. Again, I'll go into Edward Pitts, the father's information a little more in the next episode, but he went from impeachment to being described in newspapers years later as an almost venerated status. So I also wonder then, were they being kind or, venerating him just for the fact that his son had been killed, or did they really think he was a good judge? And I have to wonder if in decades later, how was Major remembered? How would Tom be remembered when he did pass away? Would this main or this lone incident on Tom's record be something that tarnished his reputation for the rest of his life? After he was discharged, many of his friends were there and, were congratulating him on the victory. So was he looked at kind of as a hero for trying to get the money back from Pitts, who, again, at no time denied owing the money? So I just find this to be a very sad story about two people whose lives changed, with one being taken away, the other probably having health issues for the rest of his life. I couldn't find out more information about what treatment was used, if they were able to get the bullet out or anything like that. But I also wonder about his brother, Pitts's brother, Edward. If he wondered what would have happened if he had said, just give him the money. But looking at it legally, there was not anything there to say that Sydney, Major Sydney, should give the money to Nottingham and Toy. And then when the capias was served, it was being served by someone who was not authorized to do so. So just looking at it legally, I think that, you know, Sydney was doing what his brother suggested, which was legally the right thing to do. But looking at it just by facts, it doesn't count the emotion that Edward may be feeling, even though he knows that he gave his brother sound legal advice, at least at that point, not realizing that it would go as far as quickly as it did, that Edward just kind of lived with that for the rest of his life. I don't know if he did, but that's just something I would kind of wonder about myself if, you know, anything like that ever happened in my family. But it was a life taken that did not need to be taken. And even though I couldn't find specifically how the injuries affected AP Tom in the future, I do know that he lived to be 80 years old. He died in 1935, and at least from some of the addresses I see in Norfolk, he may even be buried in the same location or very close to the Pitts family. So the two men may be buried in the same cemetery. I know today that sometimes we look at motives for murder or violent crime, and people will say something like, think about the good old days. Well, I've always had a problem with that saying because the good old days weren't always so good. I think that might actually be part of a Waylon Jennings song, or somebody I'm thinking had a song that had a line similar to that in there. But again, you know, the good old days, it still had their violence. They had ideas that and beliefs that are totally opposite of what our values are today. So Major Sydney Pitts probably did not think these were the good old days. We see violent crime take place today for what we may see as a very little return on the crime. You know, if someone's stealing something and they only come away with a, you know, just a little bit of money, or what they steal isn't worth that much, but someone still gets injured. We see that often. But this also shows pretty much the same thing. It was for relatively little gain because the money was not going to go to Tom or Nottingham or Toy. It was going to go to the post office to settle the debt that Brittingham would have left by taking the money out and lending it to Major Pitts. So none of the three men involved in getting the capias actually would have gained anything monetarily. It almost seemed like it was for their pride. And I guess looking at it from my context, I don't see how it was worth it to, you know, leave a family, your father, or in the case of Tom, if Tom had died, he would have left his father and other family members behind wondering why he died for the debt of another person. You know, Sydney Pitts, his family was around. He had a number of brothers and a sister that, you know, would have mourned his loss, and all of this over $20. So it just seems in some ways things have not changed that much. We still see some of the same motives, which in my opinion, this was a very small motive to have such a tragic outcome. And again, I was just surprised by the fact that with Sydney being a judge's son, that didn't play a bigger factor in, you know, a decision. Today, I guess maybe I'm cynical, and I was thinking, well, he's, you know, the son of a judge. He's the nephew of a senator who died at the hands of another, so they're going to make sure the person pays. Not in this case. And apparently they didn't think that the evidence would support a murder charge or even manslaughter. But that's where this episode ends. Next episode may be a little bit longer because I will talk about the history of the island a little bit more and some more about the father and the family itself, as I think it fits more into that episode. I know I was going to try to do like a natural disaster or another type of tragic event soon, but I do want to get the two episodes with the brothers in back to back. Then After that, I will be looking for some other type of topic to cover, just to give a little bit of variety or range in, you know, what type of tragic events happened here on Delmarva, and exploring those motivations or the reasons behind those events. I do appreciate everybody tuning in to listen. Because I do have most of the information already put together and the outline typed for the next episode, I'm going to try to get it out sooner rather than later, so that you can listen to them closer together and find out a little more about the families. But again, I appreciate everybody listening. If you get a chance to share the episode, or, you know, just let someone know that there is a podcast out here about Delmarva events, I would really, really appreciate it. And again, thank you all for listening. I will talk to you again very soon. Bye.